Week one is here. We try to get to as many games as possible, including Clemson, Georgia, Miami, Florida, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, transfer portal, all sorts of mayhem. Stay tuned.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Each coach should have his bottle of booze back in his darkened office for Saturday night.
Ross Dellinger.
And one of those things is not like the others.
And SI's Pat Forty.
There was some free pod coaching of Dan Wetzel's for the pronunciation of Monongahela.
Here's Pat, Ross, and Dan.
All right, welcome to Pod Week One, baby. It's here. It is here. Gentlemen.
Praise the Lord.
I have a stat of the week already. News break of the week. The Monongahela County School System in West Virginia encompasses Morgantown, West Virginia. They called off school, public school, on Friday because of the Penn State-West Virginia game.
Yes. I love it. That's a good school district.
No school.
He always said right. West Virginia belongs in the SEC. There you go.
Penn State's coming. Everybody gets the day off. I'm not talking about the college. I'm talking about just the public schools in the whole county. Yeah. Not Morgantown City Schools. The whole county. I don't know if they have.
I love it.
They're worried about the bus drivers being drunk because they're already started drinking? I don't. Parents aren't going to get the kids up. Like, it's just too much. The high school kids are all going to skip and ride the train and get trashed. What?
That's it. That's, you know, that like the influx of people is going to be so great that even the PRT is going to be taxed to deliver.
They're going to tax the liquor stores.
This could be the PRT's finest hour.
This is the moment. The amount of that West Virginia booze, NIL booze that they've got. I'm just saying, watch them shoot up in those rivals rankings next. Neil Brown, win or lose, they're going to have some cash to spend down there in Morgantown.
Oh, yeah.
I've said for years that West Virginia Pitt should be the season opener for all of college football. Backyard brawl.
Yeah.
We don't get that. This is pretty awesome, though. Penn State coming to town. But I just think the more West Virginia we get in our life, especially early, it's like an adrenaline shot right in. We ain't messing around. We're closing the schools a day before, not a day after, a day before. 4-day weekend. Penn State's here.
Got to start partying early, that tailgating, Dan, early.
Keep the kids home.
Got to douse the couches with kerosene. Get them ready.
Do it up. Have yourself a weekend, West Virginia. Fox kind of screwed you with this Big Noon, or I don't know. Who's broadcasting this game? Whoever's broadcasting this thing.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know.
Whatever.
It's opposite Clemson, Georgia, which is unfortunate. Yeah. They're both at noon.
It should be at 7:30 at night. Take me home.
I'm heading to Atlanta for Clemson, Georgia, and I really regret. I mean, you know, Morgantown's like a 3-hour drive for me, and I really regret. I kind of should have gone just to Morgantown to see that and ride the PRT on game day.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. I'm going to Atlanta too, but my heart will be in Morgantown and with those Monongahela school children. Right. And by the way, there was some pre-pod coaching of Dan Wetzel's for the pronunciation of Monongahela.
That is true.
But he came through brilliantly.
I looked it up and we should have just done that as the opening bit. I'm trying to be more professional. I forget it. I'm already giving up. Season 6 minutes old. I'm giving up. Monongahela. I mean, that's a big river. Yeah. I knew that one. One of the three rivers.
Yeah.
One of the three rivers.
Right.
Anyway, get after it, Morgantown. We're there in spirit. We're there in spirit. But I love an entire county just shutting down the public schools. Just assuming. Good thing could happen if we actually have class. So we're going to get to a ton of games here today. And all of it. I think Ross had a really good story this week, which I think is the story of the season. And it'll be the story of week one as people sit there and go, oh, I didn't know that guy was here. The transfer portal obviously is wild. He has a stat, Ross. 43 of the 68 power conference teams. I think that includes Notre Dame.
Yes.
Okay. Power four conferences and Notre Dame, 68 teams. 43 of them are transfers. 63% clip.
Of the starting quarterbacks.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Projected starters. Yeah, there's like, what? There's probably like 5 to 7 that are kind of up in the air. We don't know. So I kind of projected the starters. I mean, that's even a higher. I knew it would be a high clip. Obviously, we know the transient nature of the industry in general, but especially with quarterbacks. But some of those numbers even surprised me. So I'll go through a few of the numbers, Dan. Well, there's 68, power conference schools, obviously, like you said, and 43 projected will start transfer quarterbacks. 30, though, this was the real number that was shocking to me. 30 of the 43 that are starting transfer quarterbacks are first-year quarterback. They're in their very first year at that school. Pretty remarkable. It was like, just a few years ago, it was a rarity, at least, to see a first-year player start at quarterback, whether it's a true freshman or a transfer or whatnot. But now we see it so much. We see these power conference starters, maybe at the low to mid power conference level, transfer maybe to a, you might call a higher power conference school and immediately take over as the starter. Some other figures from that story is, God, these guys are old. Some of them are 26. A couple of them are 26 years old. The average year in college for these 43 starting quarterbacks is 4.7 years. So roughly 5 years. They've roughly averaged about 5 years in college. There are several that are in their sixth year. There are, I think, three in their seventh year in college. And most of them, this is just their second school, but 8 of the 43, this is their third school. And there's one guy, Cal quarterback, Chandler Rogers, who's in his fourth school.
Wow. So,
this is the nature of the business now. The interesting thing to me was the number of first-year transfers that are starting, as you said, Ross, because one thing I think that we've seen is the second year transfer guys tend to really elevate. That was Jaden Daniels second year at LSU. That was Joe Burrow second year at LSU. That was Michael Penix. Penix second year at Washington. Yeah. Yeah. First year, get your feet under you. And then the second year, take off, so to speak.
Bunch, Bo Nix.
There's teams,
stuff like that.
Yeah. Bo Nix was, there are teams, big, good teams that need the first year guy to take off immediately. Ohio State, Notre Dame, et cetera. They are counting on first year transfers.
Yeah. And I think it's that first year. I mean, look, Quinn Ewers is a transfer, but he's been there a while. Shedeur Sanders is a transfer, but he's coming back. So, and I said a couple weeks ago, I think one of the interesting storylines is, does this work? Does plug and play work at those positions? We've seen it work when it's like, I need another cornerback. I'm going to bring a guy into the offensive line. I got an edge rusher here. Okay, fine. What about at quarterback? Right. And the biggest gamble being at these top schools where you're sitting there saying, well, we've developing a guy, but let's go get Dillon Gabriel. We're Ohio State, could bring back a starter. Let's go get Will Howard. We think he's an upgrade. And those guys have, some of these are out of desperation. I think Notre Dame had a gap, but it's interesting. It's going to be dizzying for the fans, because you're going to be like, wait, I do remember that guy. I mean, someone like a Riley Leonard was fairly, prominent player at Duke, and now he's at Notre Dame, and you go, what is going on? It also allows some of these schools like a Notre Dame to survive a recruiting gap right? They have, let's say, CJ Carr as their true freshman. Maybe he's ready in a year and becomes that guy that's in the program. Or, but you can bring in, I mean, they brought in Sam Hartman last year. We're going to miss him. Now they bring in Riley Leonard and out, but the expectations are so enormous for some of these programs. These aren't just new guys. These are new guys at places that, you know, that absolutely have to win. I think you brought it up, like the most heated game this weekend is, or maybe the most important game, we'll get to it, is Miami, Florida, right? Now, Graham Mertz, who started at Wisconsin, is back for a second year at Florida, but Cam Ward is expected to come in and win that game for the Canes. And it's like you're right in the fire, man. Welcome to football in the South. You're going right into the swamp. And 90,000, you wanted this, Cam. Here you go. And so it's going to be an interesting adjustment.
Yeah,
it is.
Go ahead, Pat.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to cite some of the money type of figures, you know, from, and again, take all of it with a grain of salt, right? We've learned one thing during NIL over the last 3 years or so, and that is you can't believe a lot of the numbers and just take it with a grain of salt. But I interviewed the head of the collective association and another head of the student athlete NIL organization, which manages 50 collectives. So these folks should know the market, you know, and Russell White, the head of the president of the collective association, had mentioned that, you know, the highest, some of the best quarterbacks, the top quarterbacks are making certainly in the seven figures around the $1.5 million range. Jason Belzer, the CEO of student athlete NIL, mentioned that the average that he saw for a transfer quarterback was more like $350,000, but you know, the top 10 or so are above the $1 million mark. He mentioned that the highest that he saw among his collectives was a deal for a transfer quarterback at $1.2 million. And I kind of talked to both of those guys about how that will change, or if it will change, in the new revenue sharing model. Belzer brought up a good point. You know, if schools are going to allot $15 to $17 million to a football team to share revenue, well, $1 or $1.5 million, right, is a good chunk of that. You know, as much as 6, 8, 10% of that going to one player. Do you do that? Schools have to ask themselves. So it's going to be interesting if the quarterback market is impacted in this new rev share model.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're paying our general managers $850,000 a year now, so they can figure that out, I guess. But given the importance of quarterbacks, I think you will see. It's going to be like if you can get a star coordinator, those salaries aren't going to go down. I would think that a star quarterback salaries are going to do nothing but go up, and they'll figure it out around them for the most part. Some places, you know, at a Georgia, you may be so good at so many positions that you could feel like, okay, we don't have to have the best quarterback to still win a lot. But Carson Beck probably ain't coming cheap, and neither's Jaden Rashada sitting behind him. So it'll be interesting to watch that market evolve, I guess. And I know Dan Wetzel doesn't want to know what the real figures are for what guys are making, but I do. I'm curious to hear what the numbers
are. I wouldn't mind knowing, because I'm intrigued at where they put their resources. I think it'll be very mirror what the NFL does. Yeah, the quarterbacks are going to get paid. You don't sit there at Georgia and say, I got enough good, really good players to win a ton of games, but we're going to cheap out at QB. Georgia's got
cheap out.
Two. You turn on ESPN and for 24 hours a day, they talk about whether Dak Prescott's going to get extended. Like this is where this is headed. How much money is quarterbacks going to get? The quarterback rate is always going to go up. Other positions will drop back, and you'll see that. Maybe that's a right smart way to do it. Maybe not. The interesting part for college football on this is that every position can be done free agent wise every single year. So some school that sits there and says, I've got $2 million to spend, but I don't have the money for I can't win, spend that $2 million on an elite quarterback. Let's just get five really good defensive backs. I think it's going to be interesting how people allot the money, because it's different than the NFL where you're kind of boxed in with certain guys. And so, but if you don't have a quarterback in the NFL, you ain't going anywhere. And college football, I think will, you know, especially when you're dealing with so many playoff games and things like that. So it will be dizzying. Try to keep a scorecard. I feel bad for the announcers. Sometimes I get kind of aggravated because they'll be like, they have to throw the transfer in there. And so, like, if you sit there and say, okay, Notre Dame quarterback Riley Leonard transferred over from Duke, you might be like, oh, because you hear that name and you're like, oh, who's that guy? Oh, right. Dylan Gabriel, he used to be, all right, okay, I've heard that name. But it'll be like a pass breakup by some guy. He just transferred in from Austin Peay. Like, I didn't remember him at Austin Peay. Word to the announcers. Be judicious with your transfer notes. If I didn't know he used to be.
Don't over-explain.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know where he was before. I've never heard of this guy. Or his name's just like Robert Smith, you know? Like, okay, good play. Tell me his hometown, not where he signed with out of high school. I want more hometowns. Yeah.
I did want to circle back, you were talking about Graham Mertz against Cam Ward, but especially Cam Ward, who this is the case in recruiting as well. People, you start getting that desperation buildup of like, we've got to have this guy. And he's going to be the savior. And maybe Cam Ward will be, because people out west sure are impressed with him. But there's a lot of pressure on those guys. And be careful how much you throw on the shoulders of your quarterback. Ask Florida State. You know, DJ Uiagalelei came in. Oh, we're going to be okay. We're going back to the playoff. We got DJ. Well, you know, you might be asking more than your guys ready to deliver right away.
You know, they're we talk about the Florida Miami game having two transfer quarterbacks, but there are games out there, right, where there's no transfer at all. It's kind of an anomaly now. But you look at the game out west in Las Vegas with LSU and USC, and both starting quarterbacks have been at their respective schools for 3 years. Each has one start, and each played behind a Heisman Trophy winner, and they both stuck around. Which is, again, kind of an anomaly this year or this era.
Well, Miller Moss for USC, it was like, what is USC going to do at quarterback? Then he crushes it in that bowl game, right? Six touchdowns.
Yeah.
And like, hey, help over here.
Yeah. Can I play? Can I get a chance? And Miller Moss, he was like a four-star coming out of high school. It wasn't like he was just a schlub, but you get stuck behind Caleb Williams and people forget about you. But
remember, yeah, it's like Tom Brady never would have found the field in this era.
Yeah, right.
They never would have, or he would have had to transfer down. They just would have kept bringing in. I mean, they kind of did anyway at Michigan. There's something to be said about learning that thing. I think that it's one of the stories of the year is Ohio State. What, you've got the killer team. You've got the team that can win it. Were you better off developing Kyle McCord, or was Kyle McCord just not good enough? And Will Howard, so many names. Will Howard is better. That's going to be, you know, that's going to be like the fascinating X factor of the season. But yeah, they're everywhere. Yeah. You made a good point on DJU. So let's talk some games, including, let's just start with one where there's definitely not a transfer because he took none. Four schools enter this season without a transfer. Who did not take a transfer in this offseason. We've said the stat before, but it is a great one. There are four schools that did not accept a transfer under their roster last year. Army, Navy, Air Force, Clemson.
And one of those things is not like the others.
The four branches of the loyalty train. I don't think, can you transfer into Army? I don't even know if that, like as a regular student?
Yeah.
I don't even know if this is possible.
I don't know.
Yeah. But yes, Clemson did not. There's like a joke. I think Spencer Hall told it was like, what's the train in Atlanta? MARTA? It's the MARTA. Yeah, they call it MARTA. Yeah, he can't take the MARTA to the the Mercedes-Benz for the game because he'd have to transfer, you know, Peachtree Station or something like that. Dabo's got to take the bus. No transfers. The ultimate sign of, no, I'm taking my guys, and we're going to win against Georgia, who I think they would transfer in or out anybody they need. We're not apologizing for anything. Full bore. I have said this in the past. I understand why William Christopher Sweeney is running his program this way. I think it's the ideal way to run a program. You would love it if every coach could do this. I went into your living room, talked to your parents, said, I believe in you. I'm going to be loyal to you. As you get your chance, you're going to play. This is what we got. We're Clemson football. I trust you. We're going to develop you. All of that. I think those ideals are fantastic. I think this is a concept worth rooting for just as humans. However, 3 years ago, before all this stuff started getting crazy, Georgia and Clemson played in Atlanta, and Clemson was a 3.5-point favorite. Now, Clemson is a 13.5-point dog, a 17-point swing in 3 years. This is the largest point spread for Clemson since being down. They went into their Florida State game in 2012 as a 14.5-point underdog.
Okay.
They did cover that game.
Yeah, I knew it was at least a decade. I didn't know it was back to 2012.
All the way back to 2012. Now, you wouldn't care if they got a transfer quarterback. Like, you don't need a transfer quarterback. You got Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson. Pre-massage parlor situation. We think. Whatever.
I was going to say, do we really know?
Don't know. But whatever. Let's go with it. However, this isn't just an opener. There's a lot at stake. You both said you're going to the game. Georgia heavily favored. Georgia could win big. Just go ahead, Pat. I don't need to set the table on a question. This is obvious that this is like a milestone game for the Clemson Tigers.
Monster game for Clemson. Credibility game for Dabo. Credibility game for the program. Are you still a heavyweight or not? 13.5-point dog is big. I was at that game in 2021 to start the season, and the expectation was that was going to be Georgia's breakthrough year, and it did happen. But the thought too was like Clemson could be right there and they could both end up in the playoff, and it didn't happen. And Clemson hasn't, you know, Clemson hadn't been the same since 2020. So how far have they slipped? Can they still compete on a stage like this? Can Cade Klubnik be the guys? This is kind of Cade Klubnik's, this is his last good chance, I think, to show that Clemson doesn't have to be a place where five-star quarterbacks go to die. You know, that you can go there and play well and win games, but you got to do it right away against a Georgia defense that should, again, be outstanding. That if you look at Georgia's team, they don't have, maybe Carson Beck is a Heisman candidate, but they have very good players everywhere. Their offensive line is good. Their running backs are good and deep. Their receivers, that's kind of the one question. But defensive line, always they got creatures there. Linebackers, they're fine. Secondary, they're stacked. And I can't even imagine if they would have got Caleb Downs on top of it. So, you know, Georgia's just, they are a fully built program, and Clemson is trying to prove it's still a fully built program.
Yeah. These two programs are the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or so, kind of going in opposite directions. You feel like that, you know, where Georgia is where Clemson was, you know, 2020, you know, when 2019, when they were on that stretch of run, and Georgia's kind of on its own little similar stretch here. You know, when Garrett Riley, the offensive coordinator, was hired before last season, obviously there was a lot of pretty high expectations. And then we saw, you know, the expectations around Cade Klubnik, and for whatever reason, just didn't happen. Didn't gel. They return 9 or 10 starters on offense. So the expectation is they'll certainly be better there, but their defense hasn't been the same Clemson defense that we saw for so many years under Brent Venables, you know, and when he left, it's like, that's when, you know, you could see a change. And you wonder if they'll ever kind of get back to that level. There's certainly a lot of doubters in the across the landscape in the industry that they ever will get back there. But the good thing, as we talked about the expanded playoff, is, you know, you could lose this game still, and this is a non-conference game too. So either way, you could lose this game, still win the ACC championship and still get in. I don't know how many people expect them to really win this game on a, quote, neutral field in Atlanta against Georgia. But I end up picking Clemson to win the ACC this year and to bounce back. But doesn't mean that they'll beat Georgia.
It's you mentioned just real quick that since Brent Venables left, what was Brent Venables famous for doing at Clemson?
Stealing signs.
Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry.
It all comes back to that, Dan, to you and your narration.
Eye candy, baby. Netflix eye candy. I would say this, nowhere will security be more intense than the who's North? I forget who Michigan State's playing this weekend. I was going to talk about them too. Whoever. Spartan Stadium's going to be locked down. Like trying to get in the Oval
FAU.
Office. Or something.
I think they're playing FAU.
Do not try to get one. Like, don't. You should be like, well, we're just gonna. We got five student managers. We only have four in the list. Heck no, you're gonna be arrested. Yeah, tight security at Spartan Stadium. This is gonna be a big game. I'm interested in the scene. Will it be 50-50? Will all the Clemson fans show up? I'm not saying that they shouldn't. It's an exciting game, and your team's in an exciting game, but like, you are playing Georgia in the state of Georgia. Just how that whole thing goes, I think you guys, I if I were you, I would have gone to West Virginia, but
you know,
or do me, I just play in golf Saturday morning and then watch it on TV all day. Knocking down beers.
It doesn't sound bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound bad. But Ross and I will be out there toting the mail.
You guys get out there
podcast.
And do the work. And, you know.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
I got things to do here. Okay, the other, there's a bunch. But the other obvious blood and gut game here is Miami visiting Florida. We're going to make picks. We're going to make our picks during Race for the Case later. But let's get to this one because it can't wait. Someone's leaving in trouble. Someone's in trouble. It's going to end ugly. There's not going to be a really good way to spin it. Either the Miami Hurricanes under Mario Cristobal have not turned the corner because they went up to Florida and lost. And perhaps that's an overreaction. And as we just said about Clemson, they could still win the ACC. Of course, but this is college football. We overreact. Or Billy Napier's in a whole world of trouble at Florida because it's not getting any easier, and they just lost at home. Neither coach has distinguished himself fully. Neither coach has won over his fan base fully. Both coaches have the potential, because I like Florida's roster, but both teams have potential and could long-term be very, very good at their school. But here we are, swamp. Ross, what do you think?
Yeah, it's crazy that it all comes to this. These two coaches in their current situations, in-state rivals, kind of meeting to open the season. I think they have almost identical records. Mario is 12-13 in his 2 years, and Billy is Napier is 11-14, and they both do feel in similar positions. It does feel like Napier is. You know, much more on sort of the hot seat, as we discussed a few weeks ago. But, you know, Cristobal needs wins. And they've invested a lot into the program, into the NIL of the program. And it's kind of time to produce results. And if you listen to the folks in Miami, Pat's going to roll his eyes on this one. The offseason and the camp buzz is you know, as good as you've heard, you know, they're confident that they're gonna be back. That the U is gonna be back. They return quite a bit of players. Obviously, they've gotten, as Dan mentioned, a very experienced quarterback that they kept through resources from going to the NFL, and instead, you know, transferring and playing one last year from Washington State. And I think they've got a lot of the pieces on the defensive front too. They've got some pretty nasty guys on the front seven there, and so it's all kind of shaped up. So, like I said, Dan, you put it perfectly. I mean, either way, the loser of this game feels that you know they're going to be in a world of hurt with the fan base in nationally, just across the landscape.
Yeah, I said on Feinbaum yesterday that I already feel bad for the loser. I don't know who it is, but I feel bad for him because it's going to be a very long week from week one to week two.
What? Sensitive, Pat. That is.
I mean, I don't feel that.
You're going to rip the hell out of one of them on Sunday. That's
probably.
I feel bad because I'm going to have to be mean to them, among
That's
others.
Right. That's right. Because it's not in my nature to be mean, but I might have to be. This is huge, and the challenge will be for the loser to block out the noise, you know, and get to week two. And that, like, if you look, Napier, I will say this: his opening games in his 3 years at Florida have been at Utah and Miami. He hadn't waded in. He hadn't gotten that FCS layup to start. Now they won the game against Utah 2 years ago in his opener, and everybody's like, whoa, okay, the Napier era is off and running. Then they immediately lost to Kentucky, and he's actually 0-2 against Kentucky, which is a problem down there. But that Florida has played hard openers in his era there, and the problem with this schedule is it only gets harder for them. I mean, it's brutal. The back half of that thing is the worst schedule I've ever seen in terms of difficulty. But for Miami, I'm glad to hear that the buzz is great in Miami. That's new. Never heard that before. That's a new development. Since 2001, they've always been ready to win another title. But like, the pieces are there. The reason why I think that, you know, there's some Florida fans going in with trepidation, there's Miami fans going in with swaggers, because they did have a great offseason in terms of player procurement, not just Cam Ward, but others. And include, I think Damian Martinez, the running back from Oregon State, is awesome. And Miami hasn't had a 1,000-yard rusher since, like, 2015, and I think he could definitely be that guy. So Miami won the offseason. We'll see if they can win week one.
I can't wait. This is a sea of depravity and insanity. It is Florida man at its fullest, because, you know, there's multiple types of Florida man. They're all great. As someone who does something called the People's Court every week, we appreciate Florida Man's contribution to the topic list.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
But you've got your, like, Gainesville, like, inland, jort wearing, just the guys with pet alligators, right? Kind of guy that, like, calls 911 to see if they'll deliver weed or something, like that kind of guy. Then you got your South Florida, just utter mayhem down there. Throw them all in something called the swamp. It'll be like 95 degrees.
At least.
Each coach should have his bottle of booze back in his darkened office for Saturday night to get through it. Everyone spent too much money on the players. Like, they bet too much. They drank too much. They cared too much. They sweated too much. Like, forget it. This is college football at its fullest. Two desperate, depraved fan bases meeting in week one.
Sounds like a Hunter S. Thompson game story.
I can't wait. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not going to be good for somebody. And that there's nothing better than that. It's not just the joy. It's not the joy of victory. It is the agony of your rival. And they're getting it right there. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back with more games. All right, so we're going to pick Notre Dame, Texas A&M, some of these. We're going to discuss them in Race for the Case in a few minutes. What I want to do is get in now. There's so many games. Everyone's excited, right? I think Missouri sold out their stadium. Like, everybody's fired up for this season. Let's go around some games, some performances, something you're looking to see this weekend that is going to fascinate you. Pat?
We're going to have like a four-day referendum on the ACC. One of the great things about that league, I will say, they challenged themselves right away. They want to jump on that first weekend. They won all the showcases, and they did have a week zero. They had three teams play in week zero. They had a league game, obviously, Florida State, Georgia Tech, and then they had SMU, which did not distinguish itself. But now you've got Thursday night, North Carolina at Minnesota. I think that's a really interesting game. Carolina favored by 2, life after Drake May, new offensive coordinator there, Jeff Collin. Then the Friday, you've got TCU at Stanford. Stanford's first game as a member of the league. Is Stanford getting up off the mat? Is TCU still a one-hit wonder from 2022? Then you've got more Power 4 games for the ACC on Saturday. Virginia Tech, which a lot of people are really high on, including myself, at Vanderbilt. Miami at Florida, as we mentioned. And then on Monday night, you got another league game, Boston College, Bill O'Brien's opener against Florida State. Can they get off the mat, or is Florida State's season completely shot two games in?
Yeah, the North Carolina-Minnesota game, which is Thursday night, I think it's an 8 p.m. kickoff, is interesting. You know, Minnesota's going to be starting formerly the best player on the FCS level, Max Brosmer, at quarterback. One of those transfers, one of those first-year starting quarterback transfers that we'll see this week. So that's an interesting one to me against a North Carolina defense that we just haven't seen play well in a while. I feel like. And then skipping ahead, Pat mentioned TCU Stanford. That is an interesting one out west. That's like, ACC after dark now, I guess we could call it. 10:30 p.m. kick Friday night on the East Coast there in Stanford. And then how about, I know it's just Akron, right? Ohio State's just playing Akron. But this Ohio State team, I think Pat wrote about it today, but had so much hype around it, and they spent so much money, last month, like finally, right? The athletic director at Ohio State, Ross Bjork, finally said publicly to me, yeah, we're spending around $20 million, and it's just so much money and resources poured into a program. And we all know about Ryan Day and Michigan, all this stuff. I'm excited to just see some of this talent on the field. It's a 3:30 p.m. Eastern kick. Again, I know it's just Akron, and maybe they won't play, but maybe they won't play the entire game, some of these guys. But Will Howard at quarterback, Caleb Downs, cornerback, and then the Quinshon Judkins and Travion Harrison, maybe the best running back duo in the country. So just excited to watch that kind of talent on the field. And then lastly, Dylan Raiola in Nebraska. We get to see the true freshman. A lot of hype around him for a lot of the offseason. We saw his spring game. He really impressed, and all the stuff coming out of camp at Nebraska is that this kid is the real deal, and he's really mature beyond his years, sort of thing. You hear all the cliches, so we'll be able to see it against UTEP at 3:30 Saturday.
Ross had like 5 picks there. You took all my picks.
Oh, sorry about that. Oops.
I am dying to see Dylan Raiola. He was one of I didn't explain the rules of the game. His quote this week, buckle up. It's going to be a fun ride. I love this kid. True freshman. Buckle up. It's going to be like, this is confidence beyond, not like, I'm just going to go through my progressions. I've been working hard. Just want to represent the Husk. Heck no. Guy shows up looking like Patrick Mahomes, number one recruit, and he's telling Husker fans, bring it on, buckle up. It's gonna, I mean, and Nebraska fans like, we ain't had any fun around here in a long time, so I am buckled. They buckled in like that guy who had that. Remember that guy had the buffalo he was driving around with, Nebraska. Buckle him up. Drive his ass to the stadium. Get your balloons ready because we're scoring quick. Let him go. Mm. I love that kid. I cannot wait to watch that. Since all my picks got taken because you guys were selfish, I am interested in seeing. I agree with this Ohio State. I want to see. I mean, best roster ever. Think about Ohio State. Like, they have so much talent anyway. Like, it's not like you're like, boy, Ohio State with good players. The other night on FS1, they were replaying. I was so jonesing for football on Sunday night. I watched some Canadian football. Not good. It's just not good. And then I watched, they had the Michigan-Ohio State game on. They replayed it. So I was watching like the first half. My goodness, they got, it's like so many good players. You're like, oh, he's back. Right? Like, gosh, this team is so, I can see why Urban Meyer says it's the greatest roster he's ever seen. Anyway, very interesting that. I also, the one kid I'm rooting for is Kyle McCord at Syracuse. Like, got run off. Yeah. I hope he has a great season. I hope he is a really good quarterback and does really well.
One of those first-year starting quarterback
transfers. One of those guys.
Getting paid, from what I hear, too.
Getting paid well? Yeah.
Syracuse. I know. I was surprised when I heard about that. But who knows what's true?
He's probably making more than Boeheim made in like three. Boeheim is always chronically underpaid, which he always complained about, of course.
Oh, he would tell
he
you.
He was
yeah.
quick to tell oh, you yeah. he was the lowest paid guy. I don't pretend to take another job. Yeah. I'm like, well, you should have, I guess. I don't know. I think you're all right. Guy worked like 70 years up there. He's probably got a good pension. Anyway, I'm all that.
Place where the cost of living's nothing.
Who is Michigan's starting quarterback? We still don't know. Game might be a game time decision. I guess that'll be somewhat interesting. Kalen DeBoer opening deal at, they're playing Western Kentucky. But Michigan's interesting. I mean, Fresno State, no joke. Nine-win team. Who the heck knows what Michigan's going to look like? Got this great defense, but tons of questions. Sharon Moore's program now, all of that. So there's a lot there. Interested to see if Colorado State can give Texas a game. I know we're kind of deep in the weeds, but I think Colorado State could be pretty good this year. And a kind of a contender in the...
Really? That's an interesting one.
Yeah. I'm not saying they're going to win.
Yeah.
Put it this way, that spread's only 32. Again, we're deep in the weeds here. But, I mean, it's not 60 or 50 or whatever. I don't know. I'm just interested to see what Colorado State does. Maybe I'm the only one.
Yeah. I want to see the new regime at Michigan State.
Yeah.
Jonathan Smith and quarterback Aiden Childs, who we brought with him from Oregon State, who was really highly touted, who some people thought was better than DJU last year, but they played DJ. So they open against FAU, as we noted. And, Michigan State fans have been beaten down pretty hard the last couple of years. We'll see if they give them something to be excited about here early on.
I mentioned earlier, I was going to talk about them. It's just sort of quiet. Michigan State's like, there's so much chaos at Michigan and so much hype at Ohio State that Michigan State sort of had an off season to just sort of blend in. I see them as a good team on the rise, and he's going to prove himself. I think it was an excellent hire by Michigan State. But again, that starts right here. I mean, they finished last year was such a disaster. We will see. All right, we'll be back after this. All right, I think we should get to the. You got anything else? I missed a million, but we'll get to them on Sunday whenever we tape.
Race time.
Yeah, let's race for the case. Right? How many minutes are we in?
All right. Yeah. We'll race
for the case. All right, race for the case. First race for the case. I'm in first. 0-0.
Ah, please.
1-0, right? You don't get a win for your appearance on the Netflix documentary. You did so well.
Hell no. He does not get a win for that.
What?
It's gonna be a loss for that.
What?
This is for one. No, look,
you're on it too, Ross.
Ross, don't give him any latitude, because this is like when he starts claiming, "Well, I won Fat Bear Week," and that should be the tiebreaker.
Fat Bear Week should be the tiebreaker.
It should. No. Separate entity.
I think I deserve something. I think I deserve something. Come on, just be nice to me. All right, let's start Race for the Case. First game, we've already discussed it, but let's just get to the picks. Clemson, 14th ranked Clemson at number one, Georgia. Georgia is a 13.5-point favorite. The game is at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. High noon, ABC, Pat 40, put up or shut up.
Too big a number. I'm taking Clemson to cover. I think it'll be relatively low scoring. Underdogs rolled through the first weekend, and the unders tended to hit. So I'm taking Clemson there.
Same. Too big of a number. Yeah, I agree that Clemson covers this one. And if you remember when they played in 2021, it was 10-3. So I don't know if I
expected no offensive touchdowns.
Yeah, I don't know if I expected to be 10-3, but I do expect low scoring. Give me Georgia to win within a touchdown, kind of a close, tight, low scoring game.
Producer Joe, we're bringing producer Joe in. I forgot to mention that.
Right.
Yes. I'm going the opposite of you guys. This Clemson team stinks. I really don't that this.
Hello.
Well, it all comes down to Clemson's receivers not being good enough to match up with that Georgia secondary. So I'm taking Georgia to cover here. I think they cover that 13.5. I think they're going to smoke them in what's basically a home game for them.
He's coming in hot.
Georgia, throwing a bomb right away.
Smoke them, all those things. Wow. All right. I like this. Fire up, Chips. I'm taking Georgia. I'm not going to say anything disparaging about William Christopher's program. Drunk Bowl, Penn State, 8th ranked, given 8 points at West Virginia. Games at noon, terrible, should be at 7:30, but that's all right. I know they shut down the school so they could get their 36 hours of drinking in. You think you can outsmart West Virginia Mountaineers? Uh-uh. Take me home, country roads. Ross, who you picking?
Well, when I was there running the PRT a couple weeks ago, let me tell you, there was already a lot of talk about that game within the football facility and around town and inside the tiny little PRT. And I think there's some confidence that not only they can keep it close, but they can win the game. And so I'm going to pick them to at least cover that 8. I think there's confidence there. And keep in mind, Penn State has two new coordinators, right? I mean, he does return starting quarterback Aller, but new to offense, new defense on the road. It's crazy there, right? Tough place to play even during the day. So I think it's a pretty tight game. And I do think in the end, Penn State ekes it out, but give me the Mountaineers to cover the spread.
I am with you completely. Mountaineers ended last season with a lot of positive momentum. Carried over, returning quarterback Garrett Green. Neil Brown got the program back and has got it going in the right direction. And I'm sorry, I still maybe have PTSD from watching that Penn State offense last year against good teams. Now, yes, they do have new coordinators. And I think Andy Kotelnicki, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, comes in from Kansas. Okay, go to
Nicky. I like other people mispronouncing things.
He was really creative and had a dynamic offense at Kansas. We'll see what he can do with Drew Aller, who may well turn out to be very good, but I haven't seen that yet from him. I've seen competent and low risk, but I haven't seen really spectacular quarterback play yet. So I'm going to say West Virginia with the home crowd, the burning couches, the drunk fans, and the PRT mania covers.
Yeah, I think considering all that, this being in Morgantown, there's a lot more turnover than people realize that they have at Penn State. They're also replacing 3 defensive backs they put into the NFL. Daquan Hardy, Johnny Dixon, and Kalen King are not going to be there. Chop Robinson's gone. Olufoshanu's gone. Hunter Norzad, their starting center, is gone. Penn State's probably going to win this, but 8 points seems like a lot for a game that you're on the road. So I'm going to take West Virginia to cover here, too.
When was the last time you saw an 8-point spread?
It's a good question.
It is a weird one. It was 8.5, too. I guess it's come down to 8, but
just little.
It actually started at like 10.5.
Oh, yeah.
I think
people are coming
like
to the census.
Ago.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm going West Virginia. The happiest people will be in Wetzel County, West Virginia. You know, there's a county in West Virginia named Wetzel. Not named after me, but that was before the Netflix. So you never know now.
You got a county. You got a horse.
I got a horse. Oh, we're on a winning streak on that thing.
Pretzels.
We've been doing better.
Yeah, the horse.
It got sold to a new guy, though. We have new ownership. We hit the transfer portal. Wetzel the horse hit the transfer portal. I don't know what the NIL deal was. Anyway, I'm taking Mountaineers. What the heck? 8 points to cover. I am rooting for Drew Aller, though. That guy's gotten it's a tough go. It's a tough go.
It is.
As Penn State quarterbacks go. All right. The brawl in the swamp, Miami, Florida State. We discussed Miami is giving 2.5, 3:30 on ABC. They want the heat to build up. None of that early. You got to make sure it's the hottest part of the day.
I mean,
Who are we back to? Pat. I'm 2 picks in and I'm already messing this up. This is going to be a rough season.
I do not know. I'll start to say that to begin with. I'm fascinated
excellent
to
analysis,
see because
Pat,
I,
that's really
yeah, good. Hey, that's, perfect. I'm sorry. Honesty.
Yeah,
honesty.
This would drive executives crazy. I don't know. Can we clip that?
I'm taping Miami, but, that is truly, honestly, like, throw them out on the field and let's see. I don't trust either team. I don't trust either coach. but somebody will probably come through and have a better season than expected. Certainly, well, the Hurricanes, they're ranked, so there's expectations there. But I'm taking the Hurricanes to start.
What's the spread? 2.5? Miami, 2.5? You know, I feel the same way as Pat about, like, Miami's giving to 2.5. I feel the same way as Pat about it. I don't know. Usually when I don't know, I pick the home team. So I'm going to pick the home team, and I'm going to go with the Swamp and the Gators to cover, but I don't feel good about it. And I want to throw in one thing. We had a conversation a couple weeks ago about jobs. The Florida job, but we talked about at length because of Billy Napier kind of on the hot seat. And I failed to mention about Florida's, 2-year-old, $85 million fancy football facility. Because I think I said during our talk that the facilities were, So I just, I failed to mention that. So I wanted to throw that in there. Maybe it'll help them win the game against the Gators or against the Hurricanes.
Did you hear from anybody to tell you about that overshot?
No, not at all. No, nobody called. Yeah. Nope, nobody from Florida would have ever called me to ask me to make sure I correct myself on that. Nope, just my own volition.
Just checking.
I'm going to go with Miami for this one. 2.5 points just seems pretty light. Basically a pick 'em in this situation. I know it's tough to win in the swamp, but I got to bank on all the new names that Miami brought in. They need a big win here, and they need the momentum to start the season.
I like Pat and Ross's analysis is basically my outlook on life. I don't trust anybody. I don't know. I'm scared. And I apologize for whatever I just got wrong. This is a therapy session
not a
for
bad
me.
Default way
yeah,
to go
it's pretty much yeah. what I don't. I'm terrified. I don't. I just, why do I have to do this? Pretty much it. No, Canes are going to win this game. I am not scared. Okay. I am not confused. Take a knee. Go Canes. Speaking of hot environments, number 7, Notre Dame at number 20, Texas A&M. And speaking of games, someone needs to win. Would help for the Irish. The Mike Elko would like to make a statement in his first game at Texas A&M. Game is at 7:30 on ABC, College Station. A&M is a 3-point favorite. Ross, what you got?
Surprised at this line. Look, first, you know, year one, I think the line, by the way, opened at with Notre Dame as the favorite, like a slight favorite, and then it kind of shifted like 4 or 5 points into the other direction. I think Notre Dame has the much better team, but it's a night game. It's a Kyle Field. It gets crazy down there. So I could see why the line switched like it does. But it gives me more even I feel even better about it now picking Notre Dame instead of to cover 2 points. To cover the 3 points the other way. So give me Notre Dame to cover. I just think they have a better team. I think this is a championship-type team Notre Dame has. Riley Leonard goes and plays his old coach in Mike Elko. And I think Notre Dame gets it down on the road.
Well, we're agreeing far too much, but I'm with you. I'm taking Notre Dame and the points there. They're just a more fully formed program. Year three for Marcus Freeman, year one for Mike Elko. I kind of like the under here, even though the total is pretty low. It's like 46.5 or something, but there's forecast for possible rain. And I think these are two defenses that are probably ahead of the offenses. Big injury at running back for Texas A&M, big injury offensive line for Notre Dame in August. So they're both still trying to piece things together a little bit there. But I'm fine rolling with the Irish here. And we'll see what Texas A&M has to offer. I think they will eventually be far better under Mike Elko than they were certainly at the end under Jimbo Fisher, but it's tough to be up and running right away against Notre Dame.
As a consistently depressed Notre Dame fan, this is a brutal situation to be stepping in to have to play at Kyle Field, but I can't pick against my own team. I'm obviously going to go with Notre Dame here. Logic, though, for this, I think it's fair for everything that you guys just said. On top of the fact, it's a first time for a new head coach, new coordinators. There was a ton of roster turnover. One would think that would set up an opportunity for Notre Dame to get a win like this, but I'm sure that I'm going to be disappointed on Saturday night after this game finishes.
I didn't know we had a Notre Dame fan. That helps our popularity. Yeah. As a show.
Me neither.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I was a Notre Dame home. All right. Notre Dame fan. All right. Now we know.
You should have made that clear. You should have made that clear months
ago. Have been in the interview
a lot of
process?
Things make a lot more sense now. So I'm going to pick Notre Dame also. I think the defense travels, and I think they have a really good defense. But this isn't interesting. And I read today in Athletic, New York Times, Sam Kahn had he's a great writer, reporter. He had a good feature on Mike Elko, and it's very, very good. But it's a classic, like the new coach thing, where it's like the A&M, he had his first meeting and like half the team showed up late. So they just locked the doors and locked him out. And you gotta sit at dinner for 25 minutes with your teammates, all phones off. You have to talk to each other, and they're building some life skills down there. They're getting it going. Discipline, you know, all those things that clearly were lacking under Jimbo. Got that money and bought two. Didn't he have two ranches? He had two ranches, right?
I think
he bought two ranches.
Yeah.
And it just
probably bought a third. Since
he might have. Jimbo was.
You can afford to buy an island.
Do whatever. I don't need one. You are rich when you got two ranches. Two. What? How much time you got to go to one? I don't know. What's the second ranch? I need answers. But anyway, I think A&M's going to get really good because they got a lot of good players. And this is a terrific hire. I think Pat had the line fully formed. I think this Notre Dame defense is ready for this, and that'll keep it close. They'll get there. I'm going to take the Irish if you're going to give me points. Done deal. All right, next game. This is what Sunday night. USC, LSU. LSU is a 4-point favorite. Game is at Allegiant Stadium in Vegas. Oh boy. Tiger fans loose on the strip.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy is
pretty
right.
Good.
Well, and they have Saturday night to like revel, right? Because I'm sure they're all coming in Friday or Saturday. So they got Saturday night to really get hammered.
Yeah.
You know, and then recover on Sunday.
Yeah, then they got Mondays off too, so they're gonna get hammered on Sunday.
That's right. So yeah, Sunday. Mondays too. I'm gonna fly from Atlanta to Vegas on Saturday night because I'm an idiot. I'm sure I'll regret that. And I land at 10 p.m. Vegas time on Saturday night. I can't wait to walk down the strip and just take notes of what I see.
How would you regret that? That sounds like that's a great idea.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna regret it on Monday, Dan, on the 10-hour travel trip back home.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. I expect your sobriety on Saturday night will be very important here. Anyway, who are you picking? Ross?
I don't know. I don't know.
Good talk. He's got a plan on where he's drinking on Saturday night. He has no idea he's going to win the game on Sunday night. That's what makes this show special. This is what I try to tell people. You want good analysis? I got this. Look, I don't know. What? Who's playing?
I think both of these teams are going to be better than last year, right? They both went 1-8 games, maybe, each of them last year. You know, they've got – both have new – it's actually – there's a lot of similarities here. They've got the quarterbacks who have been in the program 3 years, set behind Heisman Trophy winners. Very experienced guys, but just don't have a lot of or very veteran guys on the roster, don't have a lot of playing experience. They got 2 third-year coaches who kind of took a dip last year after a big first year. And they've got new defensive coordinators. So I think both of them are going to be better. I'm going to go with LSU to cover. I don't feel great about it. But I'll say that the Tigers do enough and make enough adjustments defensively with the new defensive coordinator, Blake Baker, there, and be better on that side of the ball and more talented on that side of the ball. But I do have doubts still about the LSU secondary, kind of its weak point against Miller Moss in the receivers. So I don't feel great about the pick, Dan.
Thank you.
Well, I will see you in Vegas as well. Boy. I'm not going Saturday night. I'm going Sunday morning.
Come on. Jump on the Spirit jet with me at 7 p.m. Saturday if I can get there after the Clemson Georgia game.
I am not jumping on Spirit. Thank you.
we'll see if I make it.
Yeah.
Secondly, as an avid college football fan, I'm going to watch the game Saturday when there's nothing else going on.
Well, hopefully I'll have my iPad on the Spirit jet.
I'm also going to take LSU. I've got to be convinced that USC's tougher than they have been. Now, they made one of the best hires of the offseason, I think, with D'Anton Lynn coming in as defensive coordinator from UCLA. Big coup swiping him from the crosstown rival. But I got to see a team that can stand up to an SEC-sized physical challenge before I believe it. So I think LSU wins and covers. So the numbers, I think 4, right? They're
4.
Giving mm-hmm. 4. Yeah, I'm rolling with the Tigers until proven otherwise.
Yeah, Pat, you have the same exact logic that I have here. The biggest thing is you've got 2 new defensive coordinators and defensive roster issues, depth issues that hurt them last year. But one team wasn't tackling at all in 2023, and that's something that doesn't get fixed in one offseason going up against a team that's pretty good typically on offense. Nussmeier, that whole receiving core is probably going to have a pretty easy time picking up yards in bunches. So I'm going to take LSU -4 as well.
See, that's analysis right there, gentlemen. Tackling is important in the game of football. Tried and true. You go. Rhode Island Ram right there. I'm same. I go LSU on this. I got USC's got to show me a lot. I think the most interesting prop bet, and I'm going to say this in the most professional manner possible, how many times will the ABC cameras go to Miller Moss's parents? Because one of them would be very photogenic. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
It's a good thing Musburger isn't still calling the games.
Yeah. Right. Musburger still not over Catherine Webb.
Yeah, 5.5 out of the first half alone would be my setup. All right, lock of the week time. Pat Forty, who you got?
I'm going somewhat off the grid here. I'm going to the desert, and I'm going late Saturday night. Arizona giving 30 is what I have to New Mexico. Joe can backstop me on the number there. It doesn't matter. I don't think the number can be big enough. Arizona's going to cover. I watched New Mexico score two defensive touchdowns and still lose to an FCS team last week. So that is not a good team. Bronco Mendenhall's come in, give them a little bit of hope. But Arizona with arguably the best pass and catch tandem in the country. Noah Fifita to Teteroa McMillan. Brent Brennan, new coach and a good coach. And I think he's going to want to put on a show in his first game in Tucson. And I think New Mexico will be unable to prevent the show from happening. Arizona, big, cover a big number.
My lock of the week is taking Minnesota over North Carolina. We talked about this game earlier. North Carolina's got Mac. This is Thursday night kickoff. Max Johnson at quarterback, former LSU Texas A&M quarterback. And then Max Brosmer, as I mentioned earlier, won the FCS Heisman Trophy Walter Payton Award on the FCS level. I think Brosmer and Minnesota are going to be pretty solid this year. I say they cover at home against North Carolina. Spread is, I don't know, Joe, I got it 1.5 or 2 for North Carolina.
I got it at 2. So it depends. I guess it depends on the book. I saw it 1.5 this morning. I think it's moved.
Okay. Give me Minnesota to cover the 2. How about that?
My pick, also another Thursday night game. This North Dakota State-Colorado game has a lot of intrigue, just I think for the obvious reason it's Deion. It's going to be highly publicized if this game ends up being close. But just general matchup, Colorado's receivers are going to be too much for North Dakota State's secondary, a team that thrives in the trenches. And North Dakota State's best defensive back, Cole Wisniewski, might be out of this game, which is going to really hurt them. So I think that Colorado is going to cover that 9.5. I think that they're going to try and prove a point. They're going to probably talk a ton after this game, but they're going to try and prove a point that they're not going to start the season slow.
Boy, I got a couple here. Just to announce.
Only pick one, Dan.
I know. All right, I'm going to take – I almost took UNLV – is getting 2.5 at Houston. I think Barry Odom's got UNLV rolling. I think they did really well for me last year. And I have no idea what Houston's going to do. So I really like that game Saturday night. I would take UNLV in that game. But I am going to take James Madison giving 9.5 at Charlotte. Charlotte is down 9 starters. Because Coach Biff Porgy has admitted he practiced too hard and everyone got hurt.
Things are interesting in Charlotte.
Old school camp. He ran this thing like Bud Wilkerson or something. Or what was it? Bear Bryant, right?
Bear Bryant, yeah. Junction Boys.
He Junction Boyed Charlotte and the 9 starters got hurt. He says he gives himself an F minus for camp. God bless Biff Porgy. Like just straight up being like, yeah.
Pogey, damn it.
Yeah. Can I redo that whole thing there?
No, don't redo it. It's fine.
Pogey. I thought it was Pogey. Yeah. Anyway, I was blown away by the 9 injured starters. Biff Pogey, 9
Half the team.
He said, I'm not good at math, but we're getting close to half our starters.
Yeah.
This guy, fifth, baby. And then who knows what...
In his cutoff shirt.
Who the rest of the guys are going to be like just beaten down. Like, I'm not out, but what did they do?
This sounds a little Lou Holtz-y to me. I got to see it to believe that they're really going to have 9 guys that don't play. Lou Holtz made every game sound like it was the end of the freaking world and they were never going to be able to compete.
Let's see. Charlotte could be. Yeah. We have come out of camp, unfortunately, pretty banged up. We definitely have 8, probably 9 starters out. That's what he said. I mean, they went 3-9 last year anyway.
No, I know.
Which is, you know, I'm not great at math, but it's getting close to 50%. I feel very bad for those kids, but I know that young people – that get an opportunity. He's proud for the backup guys. When you open with JMU, they're a program that's 19-4 the last couple of years. You can get a little overzealous. We need to, you have to balance between that callus that you want the players to have and then getting them healthy. I get an F minus on that for this camp. Well, look, if he's giving himself an F minus, I'm going with JMU. If he's, okay. if Biff's pulling one over on me, fool me once. I forgot how to pronounce your last name. Love the honesty.
I will say, Joe's like going to give us some credibility because he's actually able to break down games. So that's good.
Actual research. Yeah. Like, this is amazing. Yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah. I watched me go 0 for 5. I wouldn't put that on my shoulders.
Sound good. Sound good. You sound good. All right. So we'll be back. We're going to tape at some point on Sunday. Show will be out some point Sunday night. We will talk USC LSU on a later show, but we'll do that. So the overreactions, because there's going to be a ton. We'll try to work these guys' Vegas schedules, which include flights and cocktails. And yeah, you never know what we're going to get. Maybe some craps. Well, who knows what's going to happen? We'll see. We will have a show on Sunday late, and then you'll be ready for Monday. I know it's Labor Day, but whatever. We're fired up. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're here all season. So make sure you subscribe and tell your friends about us. And share us on social media and all that, because we're going to have a good time. Everyone's excited. And we will talk to you later.